Welcome to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor, the host. By the way, I want to announce that there is a web conference calling for the freedom of Meng Wanzhou, and it's I know that the Hamilton Coalition Against the War is part of that, and I urge you to go to their site. During the program, I will give you the date of it, but you could go to the Hamilton Coalition site and be part of this program to bring Canadian foreign policy back to earth. Again, it's the Taylor Report, and we're very pleased today. We're going to be speaking to Omar Lateef, a Canadian trade unionist, veteran of the union movement, and someone who has traveled in the world and most recently has written about his visit to the Uyghur Autonomous Region of China called Xinjiang. Omar Lateef, thanks for being part of the show.
Hi, thank you for inviting me.
I am so glad to be talking to you because on the Taylor Report, we have been discussing this matter of the sort of political fever running in the Canadian Parliament with leading to outrageous, really insulting language towards the People's Republic of China, focused on the matter of the Uyghur people of Xinjiang. And all while we've been talking about it, I have been wishing that I had myself had an opportunity to go to China and to see Xinjiang. And today I get to talk to you because you did it. When did you go to Xinjiang?
And I was there for 2 weeks, 1 week in Urumqi, the capital, and the 1 week in Kashgar, the second largest city, in the summer of 2019. Mm-hmm. I went there on my own. I did not go as a tour on a tour. I made my own way, booked my own tickets. The computer was very handy and people were very friendly.
It's absolutely, I feel like I'm talking to Marco Polo because we don't ever get any actual visitors to Xinjiang. Everybody's an authority, but never goes there. Yeah. So you've written about this and you also, you've published an article, and it includes photographs. And where can people find your account of your trip?
I hope that you will put it up with the pictures, but it was recently published in a newspaper called Asian Canadian News. You can Google it and see it there. It's on page 13 or, if people would like, they can click on my Facebook page and I post a lot of stuff on China.
Facebook page, and that would be as Omar Lateef.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we will post it at the Taylor Report Facebook. And getting to right to the matter, so this was basically spring, summer of
it was summer to June. 2 weeks in June. End of May.
Where at the time, as a background to your visit, the kind of growing political chatter in the West about China and Xinjiang?
You know, as leftists, I think we are all concerned when we hear about oppression of communities, of peoples, of groups. And this had started in 2018. And so there was this concern on the one hand on my part, but on the other hand also, I know that the Western mass media, the corporate media, it lies, and it lies very, very blatantly. I was going to be in China, in Beijing, so I thought that I would go and see Xinjiang myself.
By the way, I was reading a report in the Chinese media, which I know the Globe tells me I shouldn't do that, but I was reading the Chinese media. They mentioned that Xinjiang gets a lot of visitors. They have more than 100 million tourists to Xinjiang.
And I would say that 95, 90 million would be from other parts of China, because Xinjiang is still seen as quite exotic. And it is. It's a very different culture in many parts of Xinjiang. There are some wonderful sights to see. I went up to the Pamir Plateau, to a small town. So yes, 100 million, I've heard 150 million Chinese, and quite a few million foreigners also make their way.
Yeah. So tell us about how it is to travel. I hear about, you know, their new transportation, how system is, and it's, is it easy to get there? Is it difficult? Talk about that.
At that time, the train journey from Beijing to Urumqi was going to take 4 days, and I didn't have that time. Now they have put in a fast train to a great length. I took a flight from Beijing to Urumqi, and from Urumqi I went by train. I wanted to meet people, I wanted to see the countryside, and I stayed a week in Kashgar. Then I took the train back to Urumqi, and from Urumqi I flew back to Beijing. I mean, it would be like traveling from, I would say, Halifax to Vancouver.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, there was absolutely no hindrance to my buying a ticket, to my traveling within the cities, Urumqi and Kashgar. But there was to travel inside Urumqi, to travel from the urban to the rural areas to, one had to have special permits, which I had to get. And there were security checkpoints along the highway, two or three. I asked what's going on, and they said it is because of the terrorist attacks that Xinjiang has been subject to over the years, and they want to make sure that they prevent them before they happen.
Yes, I'm glad you raised that, because one of the other things I've been struck by in the reporting is that Xinjiang has talked about the Uyghur people without. There was quite a well-organized and vicious terrorist operation going on
right in
Xinjiang. I suppose, based on what, reading your article, I got the idea that it might have been focused in a couple of areas. There is supposedly a worldwide struggle against terrorism. However, right. That's not in any of the reports that talk about Xinjiang.
No, the West supported the Mujahideen against the socialist government in Afghanistan many years ago. They have supported the Al-Qaeda and the Daesh folks against Syria. And so they support anybody right-wing who is going to be doing their work. One thing about terrorism, Pakistan fought terrorism, and it fought it with guns and weapons and airplanes. It dislocated 1.5 million people, killed thousands, demolished thousands of houses. That's not happened in Xinjiang. You look at Turkey, the Kurdish areas of Turkey. I mean, they have very national grievances. And what does Erdogan do? Bombs them, kills them. Occupies their territory. Look at what happened to the poor Rohingya. They've been discriminated against. And then, unfortunately, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, there is the Arakanese Liberation Army or whatever, they carried out some attacks. And the Burmese used that excuse to expel 700,000, 800,000 Rohingya. China has learned from all those areas, and it did a very comprehensive educational, economic, administrative, and social program to try and bring terrorism under control, which is, of course, limited to a small percentage of the Uyghur people, the extremists who want to set up a Islamic caliphate in Xinjiang and then in the rest of Central Asia.
Yeah, and the headquarters of that operation is Washington, D.C., isn't it?
Well, of the...
the East Turkestan Liberation or whatever it is
East Turkestan Islamic Movement came up in the 1990s, was supported by the West, by America. Then in 2001, after September 11th, the United States agreed to list it as a terrorist organization, as had the United Nations. But Pompeo, days before leaving office, lifted that category, and now they're free to do what they want to. One thing, this genocide business, genocide very simply, it means the killing of a race, of a people, like the Nazi Germans tried to do, eliminate the entire Jewish people that they could. Genocide was the mass murder of indigenous peoples by colonial settlers, right? There's absolutely no evidence of that. The population of Uyghurs and other minorities in Xinjiang has gone up from 10.17 million to 12.7 million people in 9 years, which is a 25% increase. If there's a genocide, you would have a, yeah. So it's just simply nonsense to say that there is genocide.
Shouldn't, I mean, by the way, the fact that you just stated, which is not in dispute, I notice that none of the genocide claimers address the matter of population, which if they did, it would be full stop, no further discussion, because it is absurd.
Absurd. And then, so there are other definitions of genocide, or a wider definition of genocide. Are they forcibly sterilizing Uyghur women to stop the birth rate? I mean, what nonsense is this? From 1978 to 2017, 40 years, China had a one-child policy. It was implemented on the Han Chinese, 92% of the people. It was not implemented on the national minorities, the Hui, the Uyghurs, the Kazakhs, the Mongolians, the Tibetans. And now, why would the Chinese government want to limit their population by forcible sterilization at that, when the Uyghurs form only 8.8% of the 1.4 billion of people of China? It is completely true, in my opinion, that the rate of growth of Uyghurs has slowed down over the past few years, but that's happened everywhere where women have gotten more education, where women have entered the workforce in larger numbers, where patriarchy has been starting to be weakened, where women have more control over their bodies and over choice, et cetera, those are the reasons why, like any other place in the world, the rate is there. I simply refuse to believe that there's forced sterilization.
Yeah. We're speaking to Omar Lateef. He's a veteran Canadian trade unionist, and he has visited Xinjiang, and it was in the summer of 2019.
That's right.
Omar, again, what's it like? The city you visited, I heard, I think it's Urumqi, is it?
Urumqi, the capital, yeah. And then Kashgar, the second largest city.
The region itself is quite large, isn't it? I mean, when people say Xinjiang, it's like they're talking about a suburb. We're talking about, it's a vast area.
It's just like, yeah, it's a very large, the largest province, with the smallest number of people. The other charge has been that China forbids them, forces them not to practice their religion. I happen to be there during Ramadan. If you go to Pakistan or to other Muslim countries, some other Muslim countries, you can't eat because the fundamentalists are going to attack you in public during fasting hours. I saw thousands of Uyghurs eating in restaurants, in public areas, et cetera, et cetera. And nobody was force feeding them. How could you force feed people? How could you force people not to fast? The West says that China is demolishing mosques. There are 24,000 mosques in Xinjiang, very high number of mosques per person for them, for the Kazakhs and for the Hui. China, if it demolishes one or two or three, what's it gonna get out of it, excepting great anger amongst from the people, because there will be another 24,000 mosques. Uyghurs, because they're heavily Muslim, that they're forced to eat pork. How are you going to do that? Yes. It's incredible. I asked, and in my pictures, I show halal meat shops, and they just laughed at the absurdity of it. They said, I mean, like, no, how could it be? Yes. Pork and liquor is very freely available in larger grocery stores, in the hotels, in upscale restaurants, and that is for the Han who are living there, 40% of the people, and also for the hundreds of millions who visit every year.
Mm-hmm. And I think you indicated the restaurants, places where you eat, also they have halal.
Absolutely, they had halal meat.
So
I asked, as a matter of fact, that is the meat halal? And they laughed and they said, of course it is, because I was living in areas which were heavily Uyghur areas. The other thing they said, and people say, and the media says, that there is linguicide going on, that China doesn't allow them to speak their language. With my own two little eyes, I saw signs in Uyghur, which has the Turkic Arabic script, which I can read, and which you'll see in my pictures. I saw newspapers in Uyghur. I saw, I heard people speak the language again in restaurants and in the public areas and on the sidewalk. And China says, no, why would we? We give education in Mandarin and in Uyghur to the Uyghur population.
By the way, your photographs show people, and you show public buildings with the, it's clear that it's in the Uyghur language.
Absolutely.
And I assume also Chinese. It seems to be...
Mandarin and Chinese.
Where they are.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if it's in all parts of Xinjiang, but I saw it in the train station. I saw the Bank of China in both languages. I saw many, many restaurants with this bilingual signage. And as I said,
By the way, that the Uyghur language is on Chinese currency.
That's
really not the way to carry out a genocide.
Linguicide, what else I was interested in seeing? Security. As I said, security was tight. Normally, one finds metal detectors at airports or railway stations. In China, or in Xinjiang, in China, there were, of course, metal detectors at in airports and train stations. In addition, in Urumqi and Kashgar, they were also at hotel entrances, for instance, and many business entrances or in some tourist areas where you had to go through a metal sort of machines or whatnot. And then I saw cars, when they entered gas stations, they were sort of looked at by security personnel if they were had any bombs, or I presume. And again, I asked why. And they said, look, it is simply that we've had so many terrorist attacks, and we just want to make sure that we keep them to zero, but minimize them. Yep. Yeah.
You know, there, as we've spoken before, that there was a worldwide agreement of struggle against terrorism, and terrorists are people who target civilians,
right.
in order to create social chaos. And I've seen photographs, and they are available for anybody who actually wants to go and look.
Absolutely.
That vehicles were used in Xinjiang by this group.
Right.
Terrorist group, which is now, thanks to former Secretary of State Pompeo, has been taken off the list of terrorist groups. And they used vehicles to drive into crowds. And there's footage of that. People cannot deny it. There's actual security footage showed these attacks.
Right. You see, genocide or suppression of people, whatever else it means that people are kept in great want and great poverty. Please, people should go and see for themselves, both the urban areas and the rural areas, and see the difference between Xinjiang and other parts of, let's say, India or Pakistan or Bangladesh. India got its independence in 1947 from colonial rule. China from colonial rule and capitalism in 49. China was far, far worse off than India in the late 40s. You look up the CIA fact book, the annual fact book CIA. A year ago, the per capita income, the per capita GDP in China is $17,000. In India, it's $7,000, less than $7,000. In Pakistan, it's $5,500. As everybody listening to this program knows, that development started from the eastern seacoast of China. First, the harbors, the economic zones, et cetera, et cetera. Then it kept moving westward. And then finally, it has reached Xinjiang also. Xinjiang's per capita GDP is lower than the average of China, but it is still $8,800 US per year. It is higher than India, higher than in Pakistan, and it is much, much higher than, let's say, Bihar, a province of 100 million people in India, which is about $2,000, where millions and millions of people go hungry. They go without schooling. They go without sanitary facilities in their houses, running water in their houses. By God, I didn't see it in my travels in Xinjiang, that kind of abject poverty. What there was, the Chinese government has said that in the far-flung areas, not only in Xinjiang, but in other places too, they have worked very, very hard, and they've gotten rid of that absolute poverty. And they're making China more egalitarian, trying to make it more egalitarian, and at the same time, much more developed. They aim to make China a developed country in about 25, 30 years.
Yeah.
According to standards of living. Yeah, sorry.
Speaking of Omar Latif, the veteran Canadian trade unionist who visited Xinjiang, when I read some of the criticisms or the negative comments, it's as though they are almost angry with China for committing the crime of development. In other words, they make advance, people are seen, and their status rises. Somehow that is creates fear and anxiety in the ruling classes of Canada, the United States. They really don't want to see that development. They would like to be a backward, colorful people that would be visited.
Their idea was when they opened up, they allowed China to trade internationally when they themselves went, their corporations went and invested heavily in China because they could make more profits. And they thought, they really believed that China was going to become capitalist. China refused to do that. And in the same sense as you have free libertarian politics in the West, and it's very, the central plan is there, the key sectors of the economy are owned by the state, either at the central level or the provincial or the county level. There is very heavy regulation, there's very heavy taxation. And so these guys thought China would become capitalist in the way they wanted to. China didn't do that. China has become a very important economic power.
Yes.
If you calculate by purchasing power parity, the World Bank says China is the single largest economy in the world today. It is striking that in 30, 40 years that they've achieved that, they've surpassed, their economy has become larger than that of the United States. So that's one. The other thing is that ideologically, as you were pointing out, they don't want to see a system, especially a system which is led by a communist party, doing so well, because it creates an ideological problem for them, governance. In 40 years, China has achieved remarkably in raising the standards of living of their people, in technology, in infrastructure, et cetera, et cetera. Over the past 40 years, you and I have seen how the standards of living have gone down in the West, and very startlingly so in the United States and in many other parts of the Western world. It's really killing them. They don't know how to respond to that to that situation. Thirdly, for them to have an enemy is very useful, because the military industrial complex wants to have enemies so that they can have larger and larger defense outlays. $740 billion, the United States annual defense budget, defense in quotes. It is larger than the next 15 defense budgets of the next 15 countries combined, China and India and Russia and Germany and whoever. Look at Canada. Is anybody threatening Canada from ocean to ocean to ocean, and then the southern frontier is the United States?
Mm-hmm.
Canada spends $32 billion per year on armaments, on defense, and it is going to spend $200 billion over the next 30 or 40 years over purchasing submarines and fighter planes and tanks and whatnot. This, when native peoples don't have drinking water, for God's sake.
Yes.
And when our children, infants, they don't have free daycares, they absolutely should. When there is a growing homelessness crisis on, you know, they say about these incarceration camps in Xinjiang. Look at their numbers. They say 1 million Uyghurs are in concentration camps. US officials say 2 million, 3 million. 1 million is the population of Calgary, of Ottawa. 1.6 million is the population of Montreal, of Manhattan City. To hold that many prisoners,
yes,
to service them, to feed them, etc., etc. You know, it's lies on a scale of Goebbels.
Well, you know, I would suggest that the kind of, and I have to call it by its right name, propaganda, because there's no actual nothing backing up these claims, but they seem to be in what I would call the million syndrome.
Yes.
You have to have the word million, and and because otherwise it doesn't seem, doesn't work as a blood smearing claim. But I want to make sure that we do this in the final minutes here. And we're speaking to Omar Lateef, and we're very glad because he's a Canadian who has visited Shenyang, and we get to talk to so few. There are millions of visitors to Shenyang. Talk again about, let's see if we can get some momentum and Canadians to start going there, and what would they see?
What they would see, the two major cities that I visited, Urumqi and Kashgar, very modern cities, well-planned, good housing, good roads, good trains, et cetera, et cetera. I went to some of the smaller areas too, and I found people living comfortably. Now, are they very poor areas? I don't know. But the point is this, it is not very expensive to go to China. And if you are going to go to China, to Shanghai, to Beijing or whatever, please, please do make a side trip to Xinjiang, even for 4 or 5 days, and get some sense of what is happening there. How is life? Is it one mass concentration camp like Gaza or things like that? It isn't. It simply isn't.
Yeah. And you felt comfortable there? People, you could talk to anybody you wanted to? You took pictures and...
Absolutely. I mean, it's mind-boggling. Like, first of all, I was safer there than in many, many parts of the United States. And people just walked. And... women and children and all sorts of people. We walked. Really, I mean, there is nothing comparable to one going oneself. So that's one. Now, not everybody can go. I would urge people that we get the perspective from the Western mass media. We know that the Western mass media lies. Weapons of mass destruction was one notable case. And look at Chinese sources also. They're available in English at the click of a button. Global Times is there, Beijing Review is there, People's Voice is there. On Facebook, there is a group called the Qiao Collective, Q-I-A-O. Don't believe everything that they say, but at least look at what they're saying so that you have some comparison, an alternate view to what the New York Times, the Globe and Mail, the BBC, the CBC are giving us.
Yes, thank you. I really like that, Omar. It's a nice summary. Also, Gray Zone has done a good job talking about this matter.
Absolutely.
The Taylor Report Facebook, we're going to post your article and the photographs, the great photographs with good descriptions of what you're focused on.
Right.
Omar Lateef, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you so much for having me on your program.
All right. This is the Taylor Report. We're going to take a break and we'll be back to talk to Eve Englert.